Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents Sports Talk Saturday.
The Mask Eagle!
On WGR.
I thought for sure that was going to be a one-off, but it's back. Do we know yet? Kyle, you're an Eagles guy. Do we know who that anonymous Eagle player was yet?
It has still not come out.
It was reported it was Alshon
Jeffrey.
It could be McNabb,
for all I know.
McNabb?
It could be.
I guess it could be. No, it was in the locker room, wasn't it?
It was a joke. It's about as much as we know, even though they say it was in the locker room. Nobody has any idea.
Gotcha. I'm not too plugged into the Eagles now that we're past them. After the Bills lost to them last week. Let's go out to the Western Hotline now. CBS Sports Chris Trapasso joins me now here on WGR. Chris, what's up, man? Thanks for joining me. How's your Saturday going?
Everything's going good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So I want to talk about some of the draft stuff coming up. We talked a lot about wide receiver earlier on in the show. But before that, the Bills versus Redskins tomorrow. Dwayne Haskins getting his first NFL start here in Buffalo. And not even including the weather might be pretty rough for him. But going against this defense on the road and all the reports and all of the people thinking that he's just not ready to be in the lineup right now playing for them. Like what do you think we're going to see from Haskins tomorrow?
I think the Redskins are going to run the football a lot. That with their new interim head coach, Bill Callahan, who's mostly known for being an offensive line coach and for wanting to run the football. I think we're going to see that a lot and a lot of play action for Dwayne Haskins when he does throw the football. For CBS Sports, I grade first and second year quarterbacks every single week, and there's been a lot who have played this year. Haskins in those two relief appearances, he's gotten F's from me, that he was really having problems even completing passes, has thrown a bunch of interceptions. He, to me, coming out of Ohio State, I liked his natural talent and just what he showed in 1 year as a starter, but he seemed like the classic redshirt candidate that if everything worked out decently well in Washington, which it obviously has, and I thought him sitting the entire rookie year would have been the best for him. Just because he didn't have the experience, wasn't great moving inside the pocket, his accuracy down the field wasn't great, so I think it's going to be not necessarily a deer in the headlights, but I think the Bills' defense has a prime opportunity to kind of bounce back after kind of getting dominated against the Philadelphia Eagles last week.
Right. What's your thoughts on the Bills overall right now with the defense giving up a lot of points to the Eagles and the offense really like two straight easy weeks you would think against Miami and a Philadelphia secondary that's really banged up. Like, what's your thoughts been on how Josh Allen's been struggling a little bit to move the football against two bad defenses?
Yeah, I think starting with the Bills' defense, I think they got a little bit of a wake-up call playing Carson Wentz and arguably the best offensive line, one of the top offensive lines in all of the NFL in the Eagles, that they might not be able to just continually to get pressure with their front four, that they might need to dial up some blitzes. And we saw early in that game last week, a few of the blitzes did get home and did pressure and sack Carson Wentz. So I think Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott need to get a little bit more aggressive. But overall, when you look at the D-line, the linebackers in the secondary, I think it's still one of the better defenses in the NFL. Are they going to hold really good offenses to 13 points, to 10 points? Probably not. But that's where it kind of flips over. And I know Jeremy White's talked about this a lot. It's on the offense. The offense has actually done a pretty decent job moving the football at times. But like we saw last week in that second half, a lot of three and outs. A lot of times where Josh Allen, he's shown more patience inside the pocket, but hasn't pulled the trigger. And I don't know if he's, not as confident with his deep ball after missing on some of those throws early in the season. He's got to pull the trigger a lot more often than he's been doing. And I think, as we kind of saw last week, especially in the fourth quarter when things were kind of getting out of hand, if he's looking at his first read and then instantly running, although he can get 5, 6, 7, 8 yards, you don't want to see that frequently from him. You want to see what we saw against the Giants and the Jets earlier in the season, where he's sitting and surveying inside the pocket. And he's certainly made strides in that area at the short to intermediate level. But I think actually the less running we see from Josh Allen, the better that he and the offense as a whole will be playing.
What about the overall philosophy, though, of the offense? And the, just the fact that, like, so around here, like, the past week, we've had a lot of callers calling in saying that they want to see the Bills run the ball more with either Gore and especially Singletary. And I don't know, like, I'm not in that camp. Like, I like the fact, honestly, that they're throwing the ball as much as they are. Not only is it the way modern-day offenses are putting up points, but I just think you find out what you have in your quarterback quicker if you do it that way.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you. When they came out in week one against the Jets and threw like 18 straight passes and only had like two rushes in the first quarter or in the entire first half, I was like, wow, this is the modern-day NFL, modern-day offense that the Bills are actually running. And everyone thought they're going to run the ball like 40 times a game. Josh Allen is never going to pass. He's going to pass 20 times a game. And so I like that, too, that they're like, hey, we have this first-round quarterback that we traded up for. He's in his second year. We've added pieces. Let's throw the football. And I like the philosophy of using Cole Beasley, using John Brown, the short to intermediate passing game. And a lot of people, including myself, thought that Josh Allen was probably still going to struggle in that area. So you've gotten a step forward from him in that way. But you have to be able to hit those big plays, because I think when I went back to watch the film of the Eagles game, a lot of the Eagles cornerbacks, and that was a beat-up secondary. It's not a really good secondary. They were kind of squatting on those short routes. That in the fourth quarter, they knew that John Brown, Cole Beasley were going to stay underneath. You've got to be able to stretch the field, whether it be with either of those two receivers, whether it be with a running back on a wheel route, a tight end down the field. So I think Josh Allen kind of needs to go back to what he did and kind of the philosophy change to what was going on at the end of last season where they were stretching the field a lot. I think Robert Foster needs to get more involved, maybe not just one target a game. And lastly, more Devin Singletary. I think Frank Gore is awesome between the tackles, but get Devin Singletary the ball in space and even between the tackles. He's small enough and shifty enough to be elusive and to be an efficient runner, even if the Bills aren't running it 40 or 50 times a game.
Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports on the Wester Hotline. Before we look ahead a little bit, what's your feeling on the game tomorrow? Like, would you take the Bills with the 10 points or 10-point favorite? Would you take the Bills?
I would. I think the Washington Redskins are going to have a really hard time moving the football because the Bills, after getting gashed in the run game, I think they're really going to sell out to stop the run. Adrian Peterson can still flash a little bit at his age just because he's such a physical freak, but he's not going to make a lot of defenders miss. So I think something like 17-3, 17-6, 21-6, something like that, where the Bills are a little bit more controlled, not wanting to get as many three and outs. I think a lot of those quick offensive drives last week kind of wore down the Bills' defense being on the field so much. So, yeah, I don't think the Bills are going to win 35-3, but I would take the Bills with the 9.5 or 10 points tomorrow.
All right. Let's look ahead on the schedule a little bit. One thing I like to do a lot is, especially the beginning of the year, look at the quarterbacks that you play over the course of the season. And a lot has certainly changed over the first half of the season, including next week. Baker Mayfield has struggled a lot. I know you said you grade first and second year quarterbacks. What's been your impression on Mayfield so far this year? Because at the beginning of the year, that was probably, like, in my opinion, one of the tougher quarterbacks you were going to play. And from what he's looked like so far this year, like, I don't know if I should be too afraid of what the Browns offense has going on.
Yeah, in grading Baker Mayfield, I think his statistics are actually worse than how he's played. There's still those two or three wow throws that he made as a rookie and certainly made at Oklahoma each game. But he's not great under pressure. I think that was partly because at Oklahoma he was behind a brick wall offensive line in a wide open conference in the Big 12 and didn't really have to deal with it. So his offensive line is a huge liability, and it's not going to change. They weren't able to trade for Trent Williams at the trade deadline. So he's had problems when he's pressured, drops his head, tries to run around, and he's not a fantastic athlete for the position. And I think against man coverage teams where Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry can separate, like last week in New England, even though that game was kind of lopsided, Baker Mayfield, to me, played his best game. The Patriots almost played predominantly man. A lot of passes to Odell Beckham, a lot of passes to Jarvis Landry. Playing the Bills, that mostly plays zone, he's going to take some shots down the seam, but I think that's where you can get Baker Mayfield to kind of force some passes that could get tipped and then have gotten intercepted. So he, yeah, that's certainly went into the year thinking that's one of the more up-and-coming quarterbacks, mm-hmm. but the situation around him has kind of led to his confidence kind of going in a downward spiral.
How about in 3 weeks from now, or 4 weeks, or 3 weeks from Sunday, week 12 against the Broncos? Any, like, this Brandon Allen, who's going to start for them? I'm not sure I've ever seen him play football. I'm sure I have maybe like at Arkansas back in the day, but I don't remember it. And then maybe the Bills see Drew Locke at that point. Like, what would your thoughts be on whether it's Brandon Allen that the Bills will face in week 12 or Drew Locke? How do those quarterbacks stack up?
Well, apparently Drew Locke is not ready to run the Broncos offense. I think Vic Fangio, their head coach, being kind of an old-school guy, being older, wants him to run a specific style. And obviously, at Missouri, Drew Locke was in the spread system, was always in the shotgun, not a lot of multiple read plays, but has a huge arm, can make those wild throws. He had a really good senior year. And then Brandon Allen is, I'm not going to say he's Gardner Minshew, but he's that kind of type of quarterback, mm-hmm. that he's going to be good in the short passing game, maybe some decent intermediate throws. Under pressure, he's kind of all over the map. He's going to panic, not great moving inside the pocket, and has a below average in terms of his arm strength. So I think Drew Locke physically would be a little bit more intimidating for the Bills, but Brandon Allen can probably operate that offense, being under center, play action bootlegs. He can do a little bit more, but neither of those two quarterbacks should be that big of a test for the Bills. They are kind of getting a nice run here over the next 5 or 6 weeks of quarterbacks that really shouldn't be near the top of the league in terms of passer rating, completion right. percentage, that they should really be able to rebound.
Right. Last quarterback I want to ask you on the Bills schedule, who I've seen a little bit of this year. Stats look pretty nice so far, and he is a second-year quarterback as well. Mason Rudolph, who, by the way, we talked a lot about him leading up to last year's draft. What have you seen from him in Pittsburgh and your overall impressions of Rudolph through four starts?
Well, I have to start with a disclaimer that in scouting that class last year, Mason Rudolph actually came out as my number one quarterback.
Yes, that was you. I forgot about that. You were like the only person that had him number one.
And here's why. Because at Oklahoma State, and he's shown this, and he's only started four games for the Steelers, but he's shown this also in the NFL, his ability to keep his head up and slide away from pressure inside the pocket, I thought was far and away the best of any of those quarterbacks: Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson. And that, to me, if you can do that, if you can stay calm when there's chaos around you, or if you don't like what you see at your first read and you don't instantly try to run and you get to your second read and your third read, Mason Rudolph does that very well. He does not have a great arm. And at times when he throws kind of off balance, it looks like a huge liability in terms of his arm strength. They started off kind of gimmicky with him, giving him a lot of jet sweep passes, stuff like that. The past couple weeks, though, and he did this a lot at Oklahoma State, a lot of high-quality throws that they call kind of into the bucket down the field, that he's kind of getting a little bit more comfortable with Juju Smith-Schuster, some of the other younger wide receivers on that team. Hasn't really gotten into a rhythm yet in the game, but there'll be a couple incompletions, then he'll hit a 40-yard pass down the field. That's kind of what he did at Oklahoma State, too. So that's a team that I think, with a decent offensive line, if James Conner is healthy, with the receiving talent they have, that could be a little bit of a test. But again, I'm maybe a little bit slanted here because I did view Mason Rudolph better than any of the other quarterbacks last year.
I completely forgot about that. I remember seeing that, too. It's like everyone's like, oh, Rosen's number one, or Mayfield's number one, or Allen's number one. And then there was Chris on CBS's website. It's like, Mason Rudolph. Like,
I really liked him.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Let's talk about next year's draft a little bit. I'm not sure how much you've been into it so far, but one thing I think we're hearing a lot about, and this goes back to me thinking about the trade deadline. Like, one idea I didn't like a lot was AJ Green for the Bills. Just the amount it would have cost to get a 32-year-old rental receiver, no, however good he is, with injury history, by the way, just didn't seem smart to me. And that was in addition to some good players coming up in free agency. And also, I don't know, it feels like every draft guy that we have on, which isn't too often right about now, but everybody we talk to is saying that this could be a really good wide receiver draft class. So what are your thoughts on this year coming up at wide receiver in the draft?
It is the best wide receiver draft class since 2014 with Odell Beckham and Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins, all those guys. it, and I think there's going to be four to maybe even six wide receivers picked in the first round. But on day two, second and third round, I think you're going to be able to get someone like a Davante Adams or a Keenan Allen that went in the second and third round and ultimately be a number one wide receiver. There's just so many offenses in college today that are high producing through the passing game that you're getting a lot of quality wide receivers, whether it be at Alabama, T. Higgins at Clemson. There's just so many good wide receivers. So, yes, I agree with you that if the Bills were even going to have to pay a second-round pick for A.J. Green, it makes a lot more sense for the long-term construction of this team to not spend the money and the pick on A.J. Green at 31 with the injury history, like you said, but invest in a 22-year-old wide receiver that's going to be cheap and could kind of build a rapport with Josh Allen as he enters the NFL. So, yes, this wide receiver draft class sets up very well for the Bills because they seemingly do need one more weapon on the outside.
And not related to the Bills, but we're seeing a lot of teams, well, we're seeing one team at least tank in the Dolphins, and we're seeing a lot of teams hovering around the bottom of the standings. You got Cincinnati right now, too, benching Andy Dalton. I think they should be in play for a quarterback at the top of the draft, although you never know with how stubborn they are with a lot of veteran players. What's going on with the quarterbacks coming up? Tua still the number one guy. What's after him? And I guess overall, is this Dolphins tank right now, if it's for a quarterback, should it be worth it with the quarterbacks coming out?
It's been really fascinating because going into the year it was, oh, it's Tua Tagovailoa. He's the runaway number one overall pick. And then there's Justin Herbert. And then now, 2 months into the season, Joe Burrow is having a Heisman-type campaign at LSU. And really, that program hasn't had a great quarterback in a long, long time, a top prospect. So there's him, and then there's Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma, and we certainly know what has happened with Oklahoma starting quarterbacks in the last two drafts from Lincoln Riley's system. So I think, yeah, the Dolphins and the Bengals, any of the teams that are like, hey, we might need to tank for the rest of the season and we need a quarterback, it's shaping up to be a deeper quarterback class than I think we originally thought. To me, though, I still think Justin Herbert is right there with Tua Tagovailoa. Some inconsistencies with his accuracy, but he makes five to maybe seven or eight incredible throws every game. He's 6'6". He has a much bigger arm than Tua Tagovailoa. 3 years of starting experience. Oregon's kind of quietly 7-1. So I think those two, when it's all said and done, will ultimately be the cream of the crop at the quarterback position.
Isn't it weird that Hurts has kind of just suddenly become an NFL prospect? Like, is that really speaking to how good this Oklahoma system is? Or is like there real talent there that was maybe hidden in Alabama? Like, what's going on with Hurts?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's more Lincoln Riley's system. And I remember when I was grading Baker Mayfield and then even last year, Kyler Murray, that you could just see that that Oklahoma system just had every defense totally confused with misdirection, run-pass option. There were wide receivers and running backs, tight ends running wide open in every single game that I've watched at Oklahoma the last 2 or 3 years. But I do think Jalen Hurts was a big recruit. He does have natural talent. And I think Lincoln Riley in this extremely quarterback-friendly system has kind of tapped into some of that passing ability that Jalen Hurts had. Is he a top 15 pick right now? I don't think so. Certainly has some tougher games down the stretch. But he and Joe Burrow have really come out of nowhere. I don't think anyone had either of those two quarterbacks, maybe even draftable. And now we're going to be talking about them in the next couple months as probably being first-round picks.
His name is Chris Trapasso. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Trapasso. If you have the number one overall pick in a Halloween candy draft, what are you taking?
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. It's a safe pick. It's the left tackle that started for 4 years. You know he's going to be a good player. It's not a sexy pick. I've just always been a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup guy entire life.
I cannot find a guy that would not take Reese's number one overall. Like, it's kind of this, though. Like, even though I wouldn't take it number one overall, I would probably trade down knowing that it should go number one overall.
Yeah, trading down wouldn't be a bad idea either. I'm a big trade-down advocate.
All right, Chris, thanks as always, man, for joining me, and I look forward to the next chat.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot.
There he is, Chris Trapasso on the Western Hotline. Follow him on Twitter, at Chris Trapasso. A lot of good draft stuff, a lot of good Bill stuff from him from CBS Sports. So, yeah, like, this Jalen Hurts thing was weird to me. I wonder almost more so what's going to happen with Lincoln Riley. I keep thinking about the Cowboys for that. But, I don't know, just that feels like that should happen. But there are obviously hiccups. Does Jerry Jones want to keep going with a puppet that he can basically do whatever he wants with? Like, Jason Garrett's not going to stand up to Jerry Jones. Does he want a big-headed, bigger ego at head coach that might tell him when he's wrong or might want to do things his own way? Because I don't think Lincoln Riley comes to the NFL unless he gets that. So, and like, it's the Cowboys, though. I like that setup a lot. I like Lincoln Riley a lot as a head coach. If the Bills were going to be in the market anytime soon for a coach, which I don't think they're going to be, he would be the guy that I'd be screaming from the top of my lungs for them to go get. And I'm hoping to some extent that the Dolphins and Jets hang on to their coaches and for one more year so that that doesn't become a possibility, but we'll see. Yeah, Jalen Hurts is an idea, though, for these NFL teams. It's just it's such a weird thing that's happened with him. Like, he was okay at Alabama. Like, he was good. No, he was good at Alabama. But nobody thought of him as an NFL prospect. And boom, like, eight games into his Oklahoma career, we're talking about him being a first-round pick. I wonder a lot about Miami's tank. I really do. Because of the future of the division. We've got Darnold here, and it's not going great for him right now. Whatever happens with Brady after, I mean, now there's question on whether Brady will even stay next year, so that's a thing. They've got Jared Stidham there, a player I really liked out of Auburn, but he was like a fifth-round pick, so maybe he won't become anything. So who knows what happens in New England in the future, but once they're done, you've got Allen, you've got Darnold, and Miami's going to get a guy. Like, they're going to get a guy. All of this, hey, they're going to tank 2 years for Trevor Lawrence. I'm not buying that for a second. I think if they get the number one overall pick, which seemingly they're on track for, we'll see. They play the Bengals in a couple of weeks. I've been calling that the game of the week, spelled W-E-A-K, between the Bengals and the Dolphins. Kyle just laughed. No one can hear it, though, because it was behind closed doors. But the Bengals are going to play the Dolphins. Maybe the loser of that game, that's the Tua game. That's the Tua game, maybe. I can't believe that Miami wouldn't take the quarterback. And some people think they might take that pass rusher out of Ohio State, but is his name Young? I don't know. No way. That team's taking a quarterback, and I think Tua might be in this division. So then you're going to have Darnold, you're going to have Allen, you're going to have Tua Tagovailoa. So that's not great for the Bills. Even though I like Allen, and even though I think he's been improved this year, that's tough. That's a lot of good young quarterbacks, and we're seeing a transition in the AFC. This is like a transition year in the AFC. Think about all the older quarterbacks that ruled over this conference for years and years. It was Brady, who's still doing it, but then it was Peyton Manning and Philip, who's retired, and Philip Rivers, who is definitely taking a step back this year. He does not look healthy to me even. Guy can't throw a 20-yard pass. And Roethlisberger, who's out for the year. Like, you've got all these veteran quarterbacks. Flacco's gone, by the way. Like, he was one of the other quarterbacks that was winning in this conference. He's gone. So you've got this new crop, and Andrew Luck, too, I should mention him. You have this new crop of young quarterbacks coming into the AFC, and it's going to be a competition over the next couple years to see, like, who's going to join that elite status in the conference, who's going to rule over it for the next 10 to 15 years. Because Mariota's not going to do it, and I don't know, maybe Minshew? Like, I don't know. Lamar Jackson looks like a pretty heavy favorite to be one of the top quarterbacks for a long time in the conference. Maybe that's part of why the AFC and the Bills' schedule has been so easy this year. Like, who is their threat right now to take their roster spot? Like, is it Tannehill and the Titans or to take their playoff spot? I don't know. I don't see that happening. So maybe it's a transition year. Meanwhile, in the NFC, who is clearly the better conference right now, they've got the established guys. Like, they got Rodgers and they got Russell Wilson and Drew Brees is still going strong at his age. And you've got other, like, even Kirk Cousins, who's playing great for some reason in the past 3 weeks. Just all of a sudden, here's Kirk Cousins throwing for 350 yards. So you've got more established quarterbacks in the NFC. The AFC is maybe in transition right now. The Bills, I would think, are part of that transition because we're still trying to figure out what Josh Allen is and how good he ultimately will become. I don't know. If I were going to rank those teams right now, I think they're all kind of unique in their own way. I think the Bills are definitely the best organization, the best head coach, even though I'm not sold on McDermott, but I would say the best head coach. And, like, they're the most put together of those three. Dolphins, Jets, all competing to kind of be top of the division once the Patriots are done. You would take the Bills GM, you would take the Bills coach, you would take their organization. But then when you get to, and roster too, like, they have a better roster, I think. Then when you get to quarterback, though, what do you do there? I think it's right to say I'd take Allen over Darnold right now, even though to start the year I still said I would take Darnold. But the way Darnold's looked so far this year, I don't know how you could defend that. So I'm not doing that. But, man, this like Tua looks good. I'm super intrigued by him. I think he's worth tanking for. I don't think he's Andrew Luck. I don't think he's slam dunk franchise quarterback, but he's close. He's above what, you know, Winston would have been. He's above what, of course, what EJ would have been. But he's above that ilk, but I don't know. The future of quarterback in this conference and this division is going to be really interesting. I had a good conversation about it with Chris Trapasso just a couple minutes ago there. Take a time out here. We'll switch back into hockey. When we come back, we'll hear a little bit from Darren Dreger from TSN on with the Instigators. An interesting trade rumor. I don't know if Dreger reported it, but he says that he thinks this
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sabres are going for a forward. So we'll hear from him after the break here. Stay tuned because Nate Geary is going to take over for Sports Talk Saturday, an extended special edition of Sports Talk Saturday live from OTB on Whirly Drive at 2 o'clock. That's coming up here on WGR. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Let's switch back into hockey here with Darren Dreger, TSN insider on with the Instigators yesterday here on WGR.
Welcome into the show, Darren Dreger, as we always do, Fridays at 11:30. Dregs, what's going on? He's at Darren Dreger on Twitter, TSN Hockey Insider. How's it going, Dregs?
It's going well, but a sad day. Woke up this morning with snow on the ground.
Is that true, huh?
Ontario, not a lot. A little skiff of snow, as I like to call it. But that's always one of the more depressing days for me early in the fall, bracing for winter. It won't be winter here till like January, but that's pretty early in the season to get snow. So I'm a little depressed today.
So Dregs, we had a lot of winds last night here in Buffalo, and branches down and trees down. I have a big tree that came down to my driveway, and I was telling Rives that I'm going to pull out the old chainsaw this afternoon, cut that thing up, and he was surprised that I even had a chainsaw. Are you surprised that I can handle the chainsaw? Are you kind of on my side with this one?
I'm not surprised that you have a chainsaw because, you know, you strike me as somebody that has all the gadgets, and a chainsaw would fit into that. I'm not convinced that you're, from a safety perspective, capable of managing the chainsaw. Now, is it an electric chainsaw or is it a gas?
Come
because
on,
if it's
now.
An electric, it doesn't count.
I put the gas in. I put the bar and oil chain in. I get nice. It going a couple of times, give it the crank, and then, you know, there's that safety that you push forward so the chain doesn't keep going crazy. I've gotten the chain sharpened a couple of times, and, you know, just
I don't know. I mean, I just feel like chainsaws are something that just, you know, unless you use them.
I love my chainsaw.
Unless you use them regularly. Well, whose legs are you chopping off?
I'm telling you. Next to my new AT4 half ton, my chainsaw is my next favorite thing. Maybe Tiny the Great Dane would be between the half ton and the chainsaw, but it's pretty close. And I got a fancy wood splitter as well. So once I've bucked down the tree and I've cut it into workable lengths, then I get the wood splitter out. And guys, if you want a good time, you come to my house and you split wood for a half a day. I'll show you a good time.
Oh, we are going to do it. Definitely.
See you there.
Yeah. When in the spring and the fall, when do you want us to come up? Like when,
what's that?
In the spring or in the fall, when do you want us to come up?
I don't think it was a legitimate invite.
No, it's always legit. No. You guys are always welcome. It's still a little bit early. I'd say by the end of November, we could work something out.
Okay.
Dregs, how was Saskatchewan? We were chatting a little bit about it. You were just talking about the stadium and how it's going to be tough to match.
It is. I mean, Mosaic Stadium is state of the art. It really is. And it's the perfect size venue for the Canadian Football League and by extension now for the National Hockey League and the Heritage Classic. It's going to be tough to replicate the experience of what everyone experienced in Saskatchewan, from the fans, and there were well over 33,000 in attendance at Mosaic Stadium, to the experience of the players and the coaches had on ice. Now, you know, you can't do anything with Mother Nature, and the conditions were near perfect, you know, establishing the ambiance of the environment with a light snow. It was cool. It was crisp, borderline cold, but for the players, they didn't seem to mind. In Celsius, it was -5 at puck drop with a wind chill probably close to -12. But the wind wasn't nearly the factor that they were expecting. I mean, at one point, they were expecting winds in excess of 50 clicks, so that would have been a bit challenging. But the ice, according to the players, was as good or better than anything they've skated on in the National Hockey League. So that tells you how good the conditions were in Regina, and I think the fans enjoyed it. And yet, overtime, so pretty much best-case scenario all the way around.
We probably won't see one like that. You think you were saying about it'd be tough to match. I know Riv or Marty brought up the one that they took place in BC. What about the Sky Dome?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. But then, you know, just and look, you know, the Dome in Toronto houses somewhere around 45, 50,000 people. That's where you lose me. I don't know where you guys are at on this. Hey, I'm okay with the big house. I mean, that was historic, and that truly was a monumental spectacle of an event. You know, how many people did they have jammed in there in Michigan? But now you're talking about mass volume, and I can appreciate that. I was at Yankee Stadium when they had it there. That was kind of cool. But if you're bringing it indoors and you're covering up the facility, I mean, all you're doing is trying to put as many people in a stadium as you possibly can. And that would be, you know, a bigger stadium in Canada, but that doesn't do it for me.
What, does the roof not open there anymore? Or is it broken?
It does.
Yeah. The Sky Dome, the Rogers.
Yeah, but it's
the
only,
Rogers,
like Drake said, it's only 40, 45,000. It's not like if you're going to do it, like Drake mentioned, either do something really big, like 90, 100,000, or do something really cool. Like they wanted to play in the front of the parliament in Ottawa. Like make it a very cool setting. Maybe you only have 15, 20,000 that you can build stands for and around it, but at least it's a unique setting.
Yeah, I agree.
So I would go for either one or the other, but you're right, Drags. The kind of lukewarm you know, location just because it's cool to do, I don't go for that anymore.
Do they need to take a couple years to kind of, you know, not do this for a couple years so it can be more of a spark?
Well, my answer would be yes, but that's not going to happen. That was, I believe, the 27th outdoor game that the NHL, has hosted.
Wow.
Of course, you've got the Winter Classic coming up. They've got Stadium Series planned and all that. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon. Now, the Heritage Classic isn't an annual affair, so they've got some time to consider some options. For me, and there's a vote coming up in Halifax, in Nova Scotia, on the possibility of building a football stadium there. And if they do that, then they're trying to attract a CFL expansion franchise, I would guess. The NHL would have keen interest in that, because imagine the marketing possibilities if you could put Sidney Crosby from the Pittsburgh Penguins from Coal Harbour and Nate McKinnon from Coal Harbour of the Colorado Avalanche in a head-to-head showdown in Halifax. You could have some fun with that one.
And what would be unique about that is it wouldn't be a regional aspect to the game. It would bring more of a North American aspect to the game. You'd bring Colorado and Pittsburgh and Halifax instead of having – You know, like, I know Colorado is playing in the Winter Classic or the stadium. I don't know which one it is this year, but it's at Air Force, right, in Colorado Springs. That's going to be cool, but it's going to be for the Colorado market. Here in Buffalo, we're going to be like, it's just another game to watch on TV or not. But if Crosby, McKinnon play in Halifax, I'm tuning in. I want to see, like, how this is going to turn out.
No, I think the Rangers should go play a team in Mystery Alaska. Hey, Drags, Marty had a point. Marty had a point here about, their grocery store clerk is their leading scorer.
Yeah.
Should Carey Price have stayed in the game after taking a skate to the helmet the other night?
We may have lost Dregs.
We may have lost him. We'll get him back. Marty, this is something you wanted to talk about in the meantime. We can wait until we get him back.
I called Dregs last night. So I was driving back from out of town and called him and I said, how does it work? Because I always thought that the league, if the league mandated a player to be removed from play because it looked like that player had taken a shot to the head, shown signs of grabbing his head, or shown coordination issues like stumbling, then they would have to remove that player immediately. Okay. And Carey Price took a skate to the head from Derek Stepan a couple of nights ago. 6.5 minutes left in the second period, and Montreal is going on the penalty kill. And Carey Price kind of stumbles up, grabs a stick, and according to the league, and we can get Dreg's opinion on that, is that they noticed the Montreal Canadiens training staff, it was their decision to remove Carey Price or not at that time. Yeah. So, Dregs, we were just talking about the Carey Price incident, and you and I talked on the phone a little bit about it last night, and how Bill Daly issued a statement and how the protocol was followed to the steps.
Yeah.
It was basically the Montreal Canadiens' responsibility, their training staff, to assess the situation and remove or not Carey Price. And with goaltenders, it becomes a little bit of a tricky situation.
Yeah, look, there are multiple layers to, you know, the language that's incorporated and used to determine whether or not, you know, a pull should be mandatory or discretionary. You know, obviously, if a player is lying motionless on the ice, then it would be a mandatory pull, and that would come from either the central spotter in New York or the arena spotter or the officials on the ice or the club, for that matter. In this case, what was noted was that Carey Price at least exhibited some visible signs, and he did look a little bit wobbly. Who's kidding who?
Yeah.
So central spotter in New York determined that there wasn't enough evidence to flat out pull him, but there was some visible evidence. So now it's on the Montreal Canadiens to decide whether or not he needs to come out of the game. I guess where it gets a little bit dicey for me here is those who are quick to criticize and say, well, the Montreal Canadiens didn't do what was right by Carey Price in this case. I mean, come on. Carey Price has a history of concussion issue. So this isn't his first rodeo. I believe that if he felt any sort of issue, that he would have alerted his training staff and they would have done what was right by Carey Price. They went into the intermission. There was another opportunity to observe and perhaps test him at that point. And he was, you know, declared by the Montreal Canadiens fit to resume the game. So I guess the only way that this is going to change is if the National Hockey League takes it out of the club's hands entirely, where the team does not have a say. So when you see a player, in this case Price, exhibit even the visible signs that we saw there, or early in the year when Craig Anderson went down after taking Jason Zucker's skate to the head against the Minnesota Wild, you know, the pull then becomes the full discretion of either the arena spotter or the central spotter, be it mandatory or discretionary.
We'll take a time out here. We'll hear more from Darren Dreger after the break here on WGR. Last segment here on Sports Talk Saturday with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Let's hear more from Darren Dreger from TSN with the Instigators.
And if it was a playoff games, now we're running into some issues, right? Because then, you know, can you imagine telling Claude Julien, you're going on the penalty kill and the league called from New York and says you're pulling your all-star goaltender in a, you know, a one-goal game, a two-goal game, whatever. Will there be a time where maybe goaltenders will have different language written into the rule book to be able to allow a little bit of leeway in that situation?
Well, I think that it has to be at least considered. You know, I think we're all smart enough to recognize that if it's a forward who potentially is injured, I mean, you pull that guy and you put him in protocol. It happens probably once a week anyway, maybe more often than that.
Yeah.
Okay, that player, assuming that he passes the protocol testing, misses what, 3-4 shifts?
Maybe.
Maximum. Well, a lot can happen if you pull your starting goaltender and he's gone for 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes. However, the reason that this language was created was in the safety interest, the best interest of the player, and because of the potential legal ramifications that continue to plague the National Hockey League in ongoing battles. The NHL may not have a choice but to get to a point where they say, okay, you know, we can't have this optically. It appears beyond the visible signs that there could be more to this. So we understand the importance and the value of the starting goaltender, but the safety of a player is the safety of a player regardless of the position. So they may have to have more dialogue and may have to tweak that language a little bit.
You know what? I think that's probably the best way to do it. Just let the league make the decision. And if you know what, if they have to look like the bad guy, I think they're willing to do that.
Yeah.
I really do. It's in the best interest of the player. And
yep.
His, you know. But moving on from that, any coaches on the hot seat? And then I'll ask you quickly because we don't have a ton more time here. Just the trade bait list. Any names on there you expect to be moved sooner than later, and I don't see any Buffalo players on there.
No Buffalo players on there yet. I mean, obviously the Buffalo Sabres are awaiting the return of Bogosian and Scandella. I don't know. I mean, it's a preliminary list, obviously. The Dallas Stars have been trying to trade Honka for a long time. There's a lot of speculation around Puljujärvi, given the fact that he's putting up some numbers playing in Finland. What's going on with Josh Hosang? I mean, this guy is effectively in exile with the New York Islanders organization. Specific to the Buffalo Sabres, you guys know this, but I can tell you what the wants are from Jason Botterill's standpoint. He would like to add a couple of forwards. In a perfect world, he'd like to add a top six forward, and he'd like to add a bottom six forward. But it's still too early in the regular season. I'm going to keep an eye on Rob Blake in the Los Angeles Kings. We saw Tyler Toffoli was a healthy scratch the other night. Obviously, when you look at the contracts of the Los Angeles Kings, you know, they've got some expiring deals that are likely going to get moved at some point this season, so maybe Buffalo can take advantage there.
You ask about Hosang. Listen, Lou.
He's on Robito Island right now.
If Lou sees something and the league catches wind, I mean, there's something there because Lou will give anybody a chance to straighten out. I really believe that. That's interesting about Hosang. Yeah. Coaches, did you touch on that? I was catching the nothing really.
No, it's pretty early. You know, maybe the Minnesota Wild are worth continuing to watch, but I feel like if Guerin was going to do that, you know, given the way the team struggled out of the gate, maybe that would have been a pressure point. But then, you know, they had their come to Jesus sort of meeting with the players, and they seemed to write things. So I think there's less pressure there. I mean, it's the usual suspects. If you want to consider New Jersey, if you want to consider San Jose, I don't think either one of those are real, though. It's too early.
Before you go, best league-wide Halloween costume.
What's that?
Best league-wide Halloween costume you saw.
For me, it was Max Domi and his Joker costume that they posted on Instagram the other night. I don't know what you have to pay to get that costume done with all the makeup and whatnot. I know we can afford it, but, man, that's big dollars because that was high-end. He was the best Joker out there for me.
Next year, it'll be even higher-end with the contract he's going to get, hey?
Drags,
thanks for your time. Riv loved that. Riv didn't. Did you even say anything today? Riv, that's the only thing he said all week was he loved the Max Domi Joker. So outdated, Drags. It's so outdated. Great chat, Drags. Okay. Talk to you next week. Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. He's at Darren Dreger.
All right, that's it for me. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show today. I'll be back with you for pregame for Bills and Redskins tomorrow morning, starting bright and early at 10 o'clock. Bright and early? Can you say bright and early for 10 o'clock? It's early. It's about bright and early, maybe. Nate Geary, who will also join me for pregame tomorrow, is coming your way next for a special edition of Sports Talk Saturday from 2 to 5 from OTB on Whirly Drive. So stay tuned for Nate after this on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.